Welcome to Doctor's Orders with your host, Dr. Baker. Now let's join today's program.
Hello, everybody. Hope your weekend went really well. This is Dr. Baker of the Business Hospital. I own the only business hospital in the world, servicing 14 countries on 5 continents. And the only reason why I'm telling you that is that the only thing I do every day is get up and work to help businesses do better every single day. And we do that by obviously providing health metrics that make you better in a host of areas. And we do the same thing on this radio show, is that we bring in guests, we bring in experts to help you see your business better and to make sure that we're providing value to you as you listen. When you're thinking about what things should you do in your business, or if you're considering running a business, my job every day is to bring you information that would help you in that journey. And if you've been following the show for any amount of time, you know that every day we have a different topic, and today is Market Monday, and we just look at different markets, different industries, and today will be no different. I'm really excited about today's guest, as we're going to bring in a little bit later, Mr. Jude Thompson, CEO of Delta Dental of Kentucky, and he's also an entrepreneur. We're going to talk about what that looks like. In the event that you want to join the conversation today, you can do so with our call-in number, which is 859-291-2255. And once again, that number is 859-291-2255. If you want to send in a personal message, you can at info@drbaker.us. Once again, that's info@drbaker.us. So when we're talking about different markets and different industries, you know, we're in a time where people, business owners, are dabbling or fully engaged in multiple industries. So you might have began in one industry or one market, and then you ended up transitioning into another. And so you have to use your skill set amongst a host or a myriad of different markets to be successful. That is much more commonplace today than it's ever been. And so that means that the way that we're trained in business, the way that we view business, we have to have much more of a crossover appeal and a much more diverse and universal skill set that we need to increase and really perfect, if you will, that allows us to participate in these many different industries. And so the way that our focus is, the way that we go about creating our businesses and the efficiency of business, we have to scrutinize a lot more, because it is more commonplace to have more companies underneath our belt, diversifying our portfolio of companies. Simultaneously, we can't lose sight of our focal point, because our primary business has to be run in such a way that it grows out other business opportunities that we may have. And a person that's been able to do that over years and do that successfully is our guest today. And without further ado, I'd like to bring in today's guest, Mr. Jude Thompson, CEO of Delta Dental of Kentucky. Mr. Thompson, how you doing today, sir?
Dr. Baker, thank you. It's a pleasure to be with you today. I'm excited about chatting with you and see if we can help some people out.
Absolutely. And one thing that maybe my audience or my listeners don't know about you yet, and they will know, is that you're a person that likes to help, you like to tell stories, and you couldn't be more interesting. And so because of that, I look at those skill sets and say that's why people are connected to you, and that's one way that's been able to make you successful. And if you don't mind, just kind of walk the listeners through kind of your journey and your pathway to Delta Dental of Kentucky, and then what does that look like for you, you know, as you run this entity?
I appreciate those comments, but we may need to add another hour, but I'll be brief with that. But grew up in a very small part of Kentucky, Loretto, Kentucky. Most people would probably only know it because Maker's Mark bourbon is made there, but my father had the grocery store, so a family of entrepreneurs in the grocery store restaurant business all my upbringing. And by the time I hit my senior year in high school, my father knew my basketball skills was never going to get me an NBA tryout, that we needed to get into business. I started a pizza restaurant called Mario's and went through school and had a couple of those by the time I graduated. And then it really was one of those things. I thought, as raising a family, it's a lot of Friday nights and Saturday nights, but I got into the insurance business because it allowed me to receive rewards equal to your effort. At least that's what I thought at that time, and it was true. It's a great career. And went to work for Blue Cross Blue Shield of Kentucky, which later became Anthem. I rose up to be at, I think at 31 was my first CEO position, and stayed with them for 19 years. Loved working with Anthem Blue Cross Blue Shield. Then I was on the board of directors of Papa John's International, and I believe it was in late 2008, I joined as a co-CEO and president of Papa John's International, and did that through almost 2012, and decided to take a little bit of a break, got involved with some private equity firm called Windchurch Capital based out of Chicago, and serve on three of their portfolio companies currently, as well as their advisory board. And was on Delta Dental's board for over 9 years when they had a CEO change. And it was 5 years ago in March that I joined, and it's been a wonderful journey. So that's all the stops. Some of your listeners may think I can't keep a job, but they've been wonderful opportunities, each one of them, and they've taught me things that I wouldn't have ever known had I not been involved with the companies.
Well, you know, you mentioned something that I think is really interesting, especially for entrepreneurs, small business owners. And once again, listeners, for reference, we categorize small business as 50 million and under, 500 employees and less. That's micro boutique businesses, mom and pop shops, startup founders, on and on. But what's important in what you were just saying as you was giving us your history is that you were a very, very young person when you started your pizza aspirations. And saying that starting a business was something that you were engaged in and that you were interested in, talk to us about that mindset when you go to embark and say, well, I'm not just going to go get a job, I'm actually going to create a company. If you can recall, talk to us a little bit about that.
Well, you're exactly right, Dr. Baker. My family was in a line of businesses that they were entrepreneurs, but I had this thought. I enjoyed pizza. I knew kids my age enjoyed pizza. There wasn't a lot of choices at that time. Bardstown, Kentucky, just gotten a Pizza Hut, but, you know, there wasn't a lot of choices. And I thought, Dad, you know, if you're going to help me get started in this business, I'd like to start off in something that I enjoy. And I would say that still today, if you do not enjoy the business or industry you're in, it's going to be a chore for you every day. And I enjoyed trying to make it work, and I enjoyed that business. So it was, the mindset was, Dad said, what do you need, you would like to get into? All your older brothers and sisters are involved in their businesses. How does yours look differently? And took a little thought and process, and, you know, just to throw a curve, but not to give anyone the downside of this, but we opened on May 24th, 1980, and my father passed on April 8th. And I can remember at his funeral, the bankers, because we had borrowed the money, and said, what are you going to do? You're going to go to college? You're going to play basketball? And I did have a scholarship to play. And I said, I'm going to do both. I never saw it as a choice. I'm going to have to do both. And I was fortunate enough to be able to do that and enjoy both of those at the same time.
Well, you know, it sounds like, and correct me if any of this I'm mishearing or misinterpreting, but Dad had an image and also put into you and your siblings that ownership was an important reality, and gave you kind of a blueprint just from an effort standpoint. And then you all saw the merit and value in that and decided to follow his footsteps, even if it was, you know, kind of subconscious or just by the fact that it was internal, even if it wasn't overt. Is that accurate?
Very accurate. And I would tell you today, I, at the Delta Dental, there's 32 of us CEOs in 50 states and Puerto Rico, their franchises, but I get viewed as the entrepreneur because I try to look at whatever company has hired me, whether that's Papa John's or Anthem Blue Cross Blue Shield or Delta Dental of Kentucky, as an entrepreneur. How would I treat their money like my money and vice versa? And I think if you do that, if you always have that kind of mindset, doesn't mean you don't take risk. You know, entrepreneurs take risk, but you don't want to take a risk so great that it might sink this opportunity that you have. So It's a very calculated and measured approach, but entrepreneurs are risk takers and they tinker and they play around with that business to see what works better.
Well, you know, you're mentioning a concept that is not widely known, but it's called intrapreneurship. And that is for people that work inside of a company structure, but they have the mindset that the company is theirs. They take ownership from a very direct and behavioral standpoint. And so if you're a business owner out there and you've got employees, whether you have two employees or whether you have, you know, 100 employees, is there a behavior and a belief that they can be entrepreneurs where when they make a decision on supplies, when they make a decision on waste, when they make a decision on the time that's spent in the office, are they looking and viewing it as their efforts and behaviors as, what if this was my company and I should behave that way? Or do they just feel like they're a slave on the plantation, if you will? They show up and it doesn't matter what they do or how they do, none of it's theirs. And so in the event that they don't view it as entrepreneurship, I can show you a culture that see the disconnect and how that company is to grow and how they fit inside of the portion of that company. And one of the things that you just mentioned there, Jude, is that your behavior saw your work as being an entrepreneur, even though you might not have been. And I would argue and make the statement that that allowed you to even understand how to run your own business. Would that be accurate?
It is. And I will confess one thing. As a 17-year-old and got into that business and didn't have my father to really bounce ideas off, and it took me some time, probably 20 years, to realize the difference, though, from what I did and who I am, which is, you know, I was the Blue Cross man. That's what people came up to me about, and I was in a position of leadership, and we had things going right. But, you know, you also have to be able to understand, as an entrepreneur, that's what you do. It's what you do to provide for your family. But I would tell you that that goes to how I lead a company as well, as we try to find out what reward systems can we put in place for everyone that helps us pull in the same direction to be successful. It just can't be about the company winning and they don't win. But I would tell you, if you don't have employees that like what we're doing or believe in what we're doing, you're only as good as your weakest link. And you really have to, you have to figure out how to disinvite those folks, which we don't disinvite many, but you've got to get people on the same wavelength and belief. It just is. And as a leader, we think we can fix everyone. Some people don't want to be fixed, but once you get that team right, and that was where my first couple of years was, is getting the organization understanding that I'm going to get a bonus on the same metrics that they get a bonus on, and it won't be anything different than that. So it's all connected.
Well, you know, I want to look at that, you know, from a human capital standpoint. So many business owners have a difficult time with human capital. I've done 31 assessments in the last 10 days, companies of all types, all sizes. And through these assessments, I would say that 80% of them have had human capital issues. I mean, I just set an appointment to do some company interviews for one particular entity because there are some internal control issues and some human capital issues. So I need to do an investigation of just the perceptions and the belief systems so that I can provide treatment to this potential company or particular company. But the reason why I'm bringing this up in so much detail is that there are so many companies that struggle with human capital. How do I get individuals to participate or be a part of what it is that we're doing? You work in an industry, and I'm speaking directly toward Delta Dental of Kentucky right now specifically, but you work in an industry that is not what I would call attractive. And when I say attractive, is I've never heard a young person say, when I get older, I want to work in insurance. Like, they never just come out and say that. You know, then you go to college and no one's getting educated to work in insurance. They just never say it, but yet still, insurance is massive. Everyone needs it. Couldn't be more important. So how do you get individuals that are working in insurance to feel great about the fact that they work in insurance?
Dr. Baker, you hit the nail on the head. And when we were at Anthem, we started recruiting MBA programs to go out and to attract people. One, not just the people that were looked like the within the doors of what we had, but for minorities, females, we knew we needed to change. And one of the leaders we picked from when I was at Anthem is now my chief revenue officer here, Brian Hart, amazing executive. But it is something you've got to teach it. You've got to let them know how they win in this environment. And we have a little saying that no jerks are allowed. We don't have time for that. And that's a mantra for us, is that we really, you don't have to be that way to run a successful company. But it is absolutely something that you have to take care of the employees you have. And I know we're doing right when we don't have to look for our next employee, that the word of mouth and how we have taken care of them, that's where our next candidates will come from. And I can tell you, with a few exceptions, that's what's happening today. And there's no greater gift to me is when I know we're picking people and people are recommending us as a good place to work.
Well, you're also looking at it not so much from the industry that you work in, but you're looking at it from the human capital standpoint. When we say the human capital standpoint, and I've been to your operation, I know that you're not looking at it from a duties and a job or role and responsibilities level. You're looking at it from, you know, Nancy works here, Jim works here, and then how do you program around them? So therefore they see their roles and responsibilities differently than just whatever the job description is that right?
No doubt. Not a question at all with that. And it takes some time when people have had a different leadership. When you come into a company, so many of your entrepreneurs, they start that company, but they're the employees or the associates or the team members that they're gonna attract have already had some background with another type of business, and it takes reinforcement, and you got to walk the talk. I mean, what's the old saying? It takes a year to build a house, and I can tear it down in an hour with a wrecking ball. So I'm very careful with when we say things to our associates and our employees in here that we're the same. We're on the same team. We may have a different position to guard. We may have a different responsibility, but if there's a haves and have not class system in a company, it's the first thing I look to tear down. It won't last long term.
Well, you said a word, and for me, and this is reference point for some of my listeners, anytime you're listening to the show, that words are very important to me. It's very difficult to have a conversation with me because I'm listening to the words intently, and I want to know if these words are being used deliberately or accidentally, and if we understand the meanings of them and the impact that some of these words may have. And one of the words you used, Jude, was attract. And you talked about the people you attract. Now, another word you could have used is recruit, or you could have said sought out, but you selected the word attract. And that has a very different connotation because that's putting the onus back on you, saying, well, if I've got garbage in here, then by theory, I'm attracting garbage. And if I have greatness around here, then by implication, that means that I'm exuding greatness. So in this instance, I just want to see where your thoughts are when you say that, you know, the people are the lifeline. And most people will say that in a sober moment. But when you're out looking to build your team or add to your team, are you thinking about it from they need to reflect what it is that we put out in the world? Or are you searching for people to try to build on that? Where is the fine line and how do you view that?
So I believe you're exactly right, but I believe one, there's a great leader. It's a book called The Bible, and he had apostles, and they believed, they had their core belief in the same thing. And getting into other people's religion or what have you, but if you don't have trust, like my direct reports, I have five, and I can tell you, we all have different skill sets. I mean, it blows my mind at how talented they are. But it took 2 years to sort through that. And there's really one of the employees was in the position when I came here. The other ones didn't sign up for what we were requiring ourselves to do. And we were able to attract and to talk to these other folks to join forces. There was trust there. And then we've got the programs in place that we all celebrate at the end of the year. If we have X number of new members and we kept more customers than we lost and we've been able to pay our bills and we have a profit. One of the other things about Delta Dental, we're all not-for-profits, 501c4s. We have to live a mission of improving oral health in Kentucky. And we give away somewhere between $2 and $3 million a year to Kentucky clinics that can help people that are less fortunate. And you know, we've just had some terrible rains over here in Kentucky. And as we're speaking, my assistant's writing a note to the board of directors to tell how we want to utilize some of our good fortune to help people less fortunate in the middle of the year. Budgets are baked and everything's already in place, but we know we can come up with the money to help people that are in dire need, and that's what we're going to do. It's getting people that believe in the same thing and believe in the mission of climbing that hill together. And if that happens, because, you know, your competition has money, products, they have people too. What makes the difference? I believe it is if they're not worried for their job or they're worried about an abusive manager that's always giving them a hard time, but that we have a system that people realize that we mean them no harm, no jerks allowed, and we win more than we lose. And it sounds simple. I know people want something more scientific, but it's that simple.
Well, you know, it's very important to understand the simplicity and some of your execution. When you talk about the simplicity of execution, there's something that comes from Walt Disney, which is doing the basics brilliantly. And if anyone's ever been to Disney World, one thing that you would not notice until I tell you about it, but that there is a trash can every few feet strategically placed throughout the entire park. And the purpose of that is that a clean park makes people feel better. And they also have more staff doing cleaning there than pretty much any other amusement park for that exact same reason. And that staff is dressed in ways that is very engaging, very inviting. But that's taking a very basic principle of cleanliness and doing it brilliantly and doing it perfectly. And so once again, that doesn't mean that it's so technical and so scientific. That's what made the difference. What makes the difference is how do you take something common and be amazing at the very commonalities that your company has to then execute on a regular basis. But even with that, Jude, I want to talk about something that's technical, and this is for the benefit of the listeners, is that no one would have ever guessed that you're a nonprofit and that you're a 501c4. I would be willing to bet that most of my listeners have never even heard of such a thing. So many of them waver between, should I be a for-profit, should I be nonprofit? And so they take this two-way course. If you don't mind, and whatever it is you feel like sharing, talk to us a little bit about how Delta Dental of Kentucky operates as this nonprofit. Obviously, you have a mission and a vision that's connected to it because all nonprofits do. But just from the technical sense, why did it make sense to become a nonprofit as opposed to a for-profit?
So first off is all Deltas are 501c4. So I came into a position where I had been with two publicly traded companies. And yes, they do nice things, but it's different when you come to a place and we do pay taxes. We don't pay federal taxes as long as we live our mission. And that mission is to improve the oral health of Kentuckians. And so we've increased our giving, but the way you increase your giving is if you win in the business world. And that was what was at this stage of my career, of my life, to be able to give 50% or more of our bottom line every year away to people less fortunate. It's just so fulfilling. And whether it's Bombas socks, for every pair you buy, they give a pair to someone less fortunate. There's so many companies out there like that. But for me, We didn't set down that part of our brain that says we want to compete, we want to win, we want to sell more. And I will tell you, we're at a record number of customers that we've ever had in this state. We've diversified beyond dental. We sell vision and life. We've got this whole mouth guard portfolio, whether that's athletic or night guards for grinding. We diversified in all of these things because the reality is the state of Kentucky is really not growing. And for us to grow like that, we had to increase the number of offerings. But the giving is the most rewarding piece of it. If we know we do well, we can do good things for people less fortunate. And that's what we do.
Well, you know, from a technical sense, and thank you for sharing that, is that there's a host of ways to go. And in theory, you could have said, we're going to be a for-profit, but we're going to then use our dollars and earmark it to corporate social responsibility, and then just simply had donations and charitable gifts based on your corporate social responsibility. Or you can set the entire company up to be mission or for a purpose, but Delta Dental as a whole decided that no, the nonprofit would work. And so talk a little bit about, and I mean, when I say a little bit, don't give us all the stuff, but give us a sense of understanding. What are some of the benefits of doing that outside of the altruistic standpoint?
Well, let me tell you one of the things. We had this status, but one of the things I realized is we were about a 50-50 giving of our money. Like 50% of our money went to very worthy causes, but they might be for a museum or something like that. And we really thought that 70% or more of our giving should go to people that need oral health care. So there are 18 clinics that receive that 70-75% of our giving. And all we ask them to do, Dr. Baker, is if we give them $100,000, they tell us the number of patients. Those are generally dentists and hygienists giving their time, and this will buy the supplies and equipment they need to provide this care to these people, that they'll tell us what procedures they run. And we take that number of procedures and what they did, and we run it through our fee schedule, our reimbursement schedule. And we know in Kentucky, a dollar given produces $4 of care. Mm. And we're like, this is good. This is good. Well, let's do more of that. Let's be more successful and give more away. And so we started that. We had to have measurements. You know, if it moves, you should measure it. You should understand it. We don't give money to any organization we don't lay eyes on. So we're just not mailing checks. It's not that. We need to see it. And then we ask for this information back so we can make sure we're being good stewards of our money. And then the other thing we did is every employee at Delta Dental of Kentucky and every board member, we give them $1,000. It doesn't sound like a bunch, but there's, you know, that's 90-some people that they can give to a charity of their choice, as long as it's a 501c3. We want them to understand the joy of giving. Whoever came up with that is better to give than receive is absolutely right.
Well, I think one thing that you're doing is you're also training behaviors that are connected with the mission. So it's not the dollar amount that comes out, because for every dollar amount you give, you could always give more, you could always give less. Sure. So that doesn't become the focus. The focus is the behavior, and has the behavior turned into muscle memory that allows you to then operate in a way that yields fruit. And so for you all, that fruit that gets yielded is the culture, number one, of giving to places that support the mission. Then number two, allows everyone that you're connected to see your passion and connectivity to the mission that you articulated, and that bodes well for the organization, which I think is fantastic. So in these instances, what we're really talking about, just so the listeners, you business owners out there, it sounds like we're talking about giving, and we are, but that falls under the realm of your business model and understanding that your business model has to work all together. It's one thing for us to think that business model is only about the revenue that we generate. What I submit to you is that your revenue generation is a byproduct of your business model. And so therefore, how you create it, how you deploy it, how you manage and how you control it, all of that has to do with your ultimate success of revenue generation. And then from there, are you a good steward over the revenue that's been generated? Essentially meaning, you know, are you using your dollars to put back into the company to grow it? Are you doing it to put into your employees to make sure that job satisfaction is higher? Are you doing it to fund missions that you've wrote out as your mission and vision statement? On and on. And all of these realities have to be checked. You know, you said something, Jude. You said that if you're going to do it, you have to measure it. And that's really important, because if not, you end up with a host of random activities that are not connected, and then furthermore, that don't have a baseline for you to compare it to. Talk to us a little bit about your evolution as a business owner from those days in the pizzeria to where you are now, as it relates to tracking and measuring the work that you do and creating those baselines.
So yeah, you know, you're not, I don't know anyone that's born with it. You have some instincts. If your family, I grew up, the first home, although I was young, we lived in the back of that grocery store, but I was told I was putting the candy orders up, and my pay was I got to pick a piece of candy when I was a very young boy. And so, you know, there are things that you get exposed to, and just like your muscle memory, things can get atrophied or they can get developed. And so I've been fortunate with that. But when you start getting brought into the world of publicly traded, those are different muscles that I didn't have. But I knew that if I'd, it would have to please Wall Street if I treated it as if something you get better each and every year. When I met Truett Cathy, the founder of Chick-fil-A, and they're privately held, but I said, Mr. Cathy, how do you each and every year get better? And he goes, well, if it's your profession and it's what you believe in, I just believe you should get a little better each and every year. Another one of those simplistic things that you're like, got to be tougher than that. But the gentleman who coined better ingredients, better pizza is Jack Trout, a great marketer. He has a book, he's since passed, but he has a book called The Power of Simplicity. Wonderful examples. And he would say being called simple-minded is what a beautiful compliment could be, because you're able to communicate with people. If you go into a room and you're speaking above everyone's head, you've lost them. You've got to be able to break that complex issue down to where it's digestible. But, you know, for me, it's just each and every day, and never quit being a student, Dr. Baker. I just turned 60 years old, and I will listen all day long. And maybe it's just one pearl of wisdom I gain, but I gain something. I see people go to these events. Oh, it wasn't any good. I said, but did you learn anything? Yeah, well, this and that. And I'm like, then you won.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's the evolution of the mentality of the business owner. I want to pause right there so we can knock out a station identification. And all you listeners, today's episode of Market Monday is brought to you by Pro Elite Training. And that's Pro Elite, one word, Pro Elite Training. You can find it at getproelite.com or in your app or Play Store at Pro Elite. What Pro Elite is the way to train athletes through the metronome of music to increase your rhythm, tempo, and pace. So in other words, if you want to learn how to dribble a basketball or play football or learn how to throw a punch or even just simply learn how to run better, you can do all of that through the metronome of music, and you can do that through Pro Elite Training. Do that with NBA players, NFL players, MMA fighters, all on the platform. It's a free model, so you get hundreds of drills for nothing. So download it today, share it with your friends, compete against one another. Once again, that is Pro Elite Training. And if you just joined us, we are speaking with Mr. Jude Thompson, the CEO of Delta Dental of Kentucky, and we're talking all things business as it relates to entrepreneurship or even how to grow a business throughout its life cycle. And if you want to join our conversation, you can, 8859-291-2255, or you can send a note directly at info@drbaker.us. And so as I bring you back in here, Jude, I want to transition just a little bit, because we know, or at least we can at least imagine the effort that it takes to keep the role that you have, not only as, you know, an entrepreneur that was raised in it, you know, over time and throughout your family, but where you are with Delta Dental of Kentucky and what an undertaking that may be. But that's not where it stops for you. You know, there's other companies that you've worked with and that some you've dabbled in and some you've grown at a high level, and I want to talk about one, and which is Game On. So talk to the listeners about Game On and what you guys do at Game On, and then we'll talk a little bit more about the mindset of what it takes for that.
So yes, Game On, so just the plug on that, it's an athletic mouth guard, but it's the only mouth guard with the American Dental Association seal of acceptance. It's a big deal, particularly for our dentist, and being Delta Dental, we think it is the gold standard. of dental insurance. But how it came about was just staying curious. I was recently in as interim, had a son win a football scholarship, and they produced everything for him when he went down for the meeting other than a mouth guard. And it got me thinking, well, I'll call UK, University of Kentucky, University of Louisville athletic directors and see what they do about mouth guards. Long story short, they didn't do anything. They do whatever the athlete wanted. It just told you there's a low bar. And so we started out with what I call the old Google machine and started trying to research world's best mouth guard. And we found Game One. It was under the name Custom Bite at the time, but the inventors were a dentist and a polymer chemist who teaches at Rutgers. And they're still on our staff, but we were able to go down, make a decision, and they asked if we wanted to buy them. And I said, well, I'm now running a company that's 52 years old at the time, and it's never made an acquisition in its life. And so I had to present why it was compelling for us to be at Delta Dental of Kentucky to have a product that could save athletes' teeth. The material itself, Dr. Baker, was invented by ExxonMobil. Its initial use is on car bumpers. It's very shock absorbent compared to EVA plastic, which is typically what your athletes are using, which would be made for a water bottle. So it's more shock absorbent. It's more comfortable. Some of the properties of it is it shrinks after a day, about 10% around the anatomy of your teeth. So it stays in. You can drink, you can communicate, and it's more shock absorbent. So after 6 months of due diligence, we were able to acquire that company. And we actually work heavily with a firm up in Cincinnati, G3 or ProCamps, Greg Derbyshire's company, and they help us promote this mouth guard through very famous athletes and the kids that attend their camps, and the coaches that work those camps give us an opportunity to explain why Game One is different than maybe some of our competitors. We're not in the box stores like Academy Sports or Dick's Sporting Goods. We are sold online by our website or through Amazon. And we now have probably about 6 Delta Dentals buying it in their states to promote it throughout in their states, which is a really good start for us.
Now, when you were looking at this product here, and I can make some inferences, but I want you to tell us out or tell me plainly here, is that you saw the technology and you saw its purpose and you were attracted by really the value proposition of what the product would do for individuals in this space. When you were making the decision to make the purchase, you and your team, was the decision primarily made based on the business model, or was it made based on your ability to move the product, but you had to believe in the product first?
Well, there's a couple of things. Two very scientific people, and Dr. Elkins and Dr. Raboni, the inventors, but they had never been in a business that needed to commercialize something, kind of what we do. Mm-hmm. And but we also knew that they had something different here. It just needed to get promoted. And I'll give you one other data point. There's a lot of things that make a decision good. We happen to insure about 95% of the school systems which played helmeted sports. That's a very true statement for all Delta Dentals. So if we wanted to be sticky as a dental insurer, how about we start providing these school systems that we insure with free mouth guards? So it took, you know, we had to start thinking of it. When we got into the patent, so we have a use patent on this, they just didn't have the money to take it through the FDA approval process for an occlusal guard, which is a night guard, a grind guard, people with TMJ and bruxism. It was also patented to be a bleaching or whitening tray. So we had all of these opportunities we knew we could take. It wasn't like we were getting in the car business selling used automobiles. This was all about oral health. And this was about protecting your teeth. So it had a natural fit. We weren't just getting in a total different business. So we evaluated. We hired the law firms that could help us with intellectual property, understood patented products, how long that patent would stay in. So we needed to go through and take a look at about probably 50 things to make that decision, and then convince the board that we had the know-how, or we would acquire or work with people that had the know-how to help us, because this is going to be distributed differently than you a distributed insurance product. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're now in B2C, where we're kind of B2B with Delta Dental, but that wasn't too far off from what I learned at Papa John's. You know, we're in that B2C business, and we've used Amazon greatly, and we've used influencers greatly. And we think we have a successful business and growing business. Each and every year, our revenue continues to grow. And so we're excited about it, and we feel good about that acquisition. It's been about 4 years now, so it took us about a year once we went through due diligence and then getting everything set up. But we've been at it for 4 years now.
Which is fantastic. And what it sounds like is that you all understood what to do with the product from a business model, and that helped drive the decision making. And one reason why I'm discussing this is that as a business owner, sometimes you're looking to diversify your product line or your portfolio. And one concept, listeners, that I speak to you all a lot about is direction versus distraction. And there's a lot of things that look like a great opportunity, but they may not. And they may take you off the course of the work that you do. And then others are legitimate opportunities that may catapult where you are as a business and a business owner. And it's always funny for me anyways, Jude, when someone always says, well, you got to kind of know when the right time is for things. They never tell you when the right time is. You know, you got to know when to hold them and when to fold them. It's like, well, who helps me with the when? And so the when part becomes very important to say, what am I looking at? Do I have the wherewithal to push it where it needs to go? Can I execute what we have? And what does that mean for my primary line of business, or am I legitimately transitioning into a different form of business? But all of that has to be scrutinized with, number one, real metrics, and number two, a really good confidence interval that what you're engaging in can be something that you can then push to a level that's going to yield the type of fruit or the dividend that you seek. And what you guys did, Jude, is that you had taken a product that had not only just fit your model, even though it was curiosity that began it, and it sounds like a different industry when you talk about sports, but it really isn't. You're still protecting people and dealing with oral health. And because of that, that's still more direction than it is distraction. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely. And it's complex, but if we could go back to our original template when we were looking at why this makes sense or doesn't make sense, there was so many things that we felt that lined up, that ADA seal, that it didn't really have any marketing dollars set behind it, and it didn't have the school systems that are in dire need. No one's offering free mouth guards, and what was the reason for? And there was just a lot of things that fit with our background, but I can tell you when we first shared to the Delta system that we bought this, there were people were, you know, you're going to get looked at a little bit crazy sometimes, but if you feel good about it and you've done your work, and whether you have boards or not, but you're committed to it, and you've run out a business plan and cut it in half and realize you're never going to be as successful as you are off day one, and you build in those that realistic view of what you can do with this business, I think it'd be a success, or at least you can look at it and turn away. But we get offered a lot of opportunities now to look at things, but they just don't fit who we are. And mm-hmm. I go back to this power of simplicity. Jack Trout talked about, what's the ultimate driving machine? Well, old enough people call it the BMW. But one of the things that he declared was the safest automobile on the road back in the day, and I guess they still are, is Volvo. But they came out with a sports car convertible. And so he said their vision, or what their core is to be the very safe and responsible automobile. And now they're going to have wind in the hair with convertible down, and it didn't go well at the beginning. Now, you have to understand that some years back now. But you've got to understand who you are and what you can be But if you're just trying to be something you'll never be, people will smell that or feel that out, and they just know it's not going to work. It's a fraud.
Well, I think that that's a massive point as it relates to your target audience and the target audience recognizing what you are. You know, you presented yourself as one thing, now you're something else. But I think the other part that comes along with that is not having the ability to execute and provide the appropriate resources, because you now you have to go outside of yourself to perform. You have to start doing things that you ordinarily would not, and that creates new item lines, whether it's to the budget, whether it's new hires, on and on, and that stretches you thin for execution. And you know this as well as anyone with the amount of work that you've done and your experiences, is that execution is the key, and having the ability from the onset to execute is key. And so that critical nature of saying, yes, we can pull this off, yes, we have the right team, that becomes vital. And sometimes you can push yourself away from it by engaging in the wrong things, things that are outside of the typical scope of your work. Is that right?
Yes, Dr. Baker, we huddled as a team, and I looked them all before we went for this final presentation in the eye. And I looked them in the eye and I said, if we lose sight of the mothership, that means Delta Dental, doing what our mission is, it'll be the kiss of death for us. So we have to do that really well. We're still all those things we promise made, promise kept. We've got to do that. And we've got to do this as well. Are you in for this? Because there was no extra money to be, you know, it didn't increase salaries. It didn't do any of that. It was just a belief that we could leave this place way better than we found it. And, you know, I believe within 10 years, I believe the mouth guard business will be as big as Delta Dental, if not bigger.
Well, you know, and that speculation isn't just a random assumption. That's coming from input that you've had even for decades in the insurance business. You know, I would submit, and maybe it's up to you to correct me, but you know the industry, you know the insurance industry about as well as any industry that you would have known, and you've been dealing in business ownership for decades now. So that means that this isn't just a random guess of yours. You've looked at these things and curtailed what the outputs could be and said, look, this is going to be massive based on tangible realities that you can stand on. You know, we don't have a crystal ball that tells us the future, but we can make some certain hypothesis of where things are going, and that's where it landed you. And then that's evidence that this isn't a random guess, which is leading you down the wrong pathway, but that it's actually more of a direction to make sure that you're relevant in the things that you do. Is that right?
Absolutely. You know, and we know through the reports that the annual mouth guard business, say it's a couple of $100 million in the United States. The whitening of your teeth and the grind guards, you know, the occlusal guards, they're 10 times as big. The opportunity is huge. And so we had to scope and size that. And we've got a couple other products. We got a performance mouth guard that didn't even have a segment. It's called Airwave, and we have an influencer by the name of Rich Froning, who's, I believe he's 3 or 4 time CrossFit champion. I love his business card. It says he's the fittest man on earth. I wish I could have that on my card, but he works for it. But we're in something like 80 countries right now in 18 months. And as a business in its own, this performance, a lower mouth guard, not for protection, but helping you with your respiratory rate, increased oxygen by not clenching, and all of that, we would be a profitable business day one, and we're just getting started. So there's so much for us to get excited about. And by the way, when you think about timing, Dr. Baker, we now have 6 employees focused on all of these businesses based in Minneapolis. We were able to find the talent up there. They have an amazing bunch of marketers in Minneapolis because of the big businesses that are housed in Minnesota, whether that's 3M or Target or all these companies. So little old Delta Dental of Kentucky now has an office in Minneapolis, and it's about our mouth guard business, and we're excited about it.
Yeah, and you should be. You know, we've talked a lot about, you know, growing a business and having focus of that business and how you treat your human capital and what that means to growing and scaling the business overall. What are some of the recommendations that you can offer a business owner about pitfalls of running their business? What are a few lessons that you learned along the way that maybe even smacked you in the head and you said, whoa, we got to pay attention to this, or the next business I have, I'll watch out for that? Is there anything that comes to mind?
Well, so when I get invited onto a board of directors, and if the CEO of the management team expresses they're not getting what they want, whatever that definition of winning is, the first thing I ask when it's appropriate is to see the compensation plan they have in place, because people typically do what they're paid to do. So if you want a different behavior, you got to have a different incentive. And it's alignment. I think that's the term you have to have, is that do you have alignment from the top to the left, to the right, to the bottom? I hate to even use that term. One of the things just popped in, no one works for me. If someone says they work for me, it's like fingernails on a chalkboard. I tell them immediately, please say you're working for yourself, your family, and your dreams. And you happen to want to help pull the rope in the same direction here at the company, because remember, we get rewarded with the same measurements. But please work for your dreams, your family, yourself. We work together. I just happen to be the pitcher, or whatever analogy you want to have. But, I have a role, you have a role. But you don't work for me. It'll end up being really devastating to you and boring to you, in my opinion. Don't try to please me that way. And so, but I think once you have alignment, if I were in any business, and define what winning is, and then what are the steps that have to be, you know, as an athlete, I know you played in college, you have to be able to break down what your weaknesses are, be real with yourself, know what your strengths are, and you got to know your competition. If they're beating you in three of the four characteristics that make your product important, what are you going to do about that? I mean, typically people see a void in the marketplace, and they have some background they know that will fill that void, or they tend to go to a franchise route, that they want to be a franchisee because someone's got a proven track record and they can help them do that, whatever that would be. But, you know, for many of them, when you're on your own, sometimes because you're smart, you did this, you think you can fix everything. And that's why I think what you're doing with the business hospital and why it just gives you a set of eyes. I'm never too big to listen to someone that has a point of view, because that's when you're in trouble, when you think you have all the answers. I do not. And I know.
You said something that I think is really key with that explanation, is defining what winning looks like. And when we say, what does winning look like? Oftentimes those decisions or metrics or those baselines are given to us by someone else, even for the business owner. I'll give you a great example. I've asked that question with the assessments, that the ones that I've even done here recently, and I asked them, you know, what would they like to accomplish? You know, what are their goals? And a lot of their goals are identical, almost as if they heard the same person tell them what their goals needed to be. And I always find that to be unique, because that means that you really haven't considered what it was that you were looking to accomplish when you established the business, or since you've been running the business. And then when it comes time for you to really think about it, you don't have a real answer. And because you don't have a genuine answer that you've crafted based on realism in your world and things that you have opportunities to obtain, is that now you've passed that along to other individuals that also have not been honest about what they consider winning to be. And I find all of that to be problematic. And it sounds as if when someone comes into Delta Dental, and now if someone comes into Game On, it's not about I work for Jude Thompson. It's more about, what does winning look like to all of us? And then how do we help each other do that in a symbiotic relationship? Is that a more accurate way of putting it?
Yes, it is. It is. I mean, there are people that we have specialists that are way better at certain things than I am. I ever will be. But I'm that generalist, and I look for people that, I mean, in today's world, my goodness, that there was no, when I started at Papa John's, I can remember when the iPhone was introduced, and we said, we better figure out online ordering. This is going to be a game changer. We did. but things are continuing to change how people are buying products and services. COVID changed a lot of that behavior. Just look at the grocery stores and their volume of online ordering now. It's very dynamic, and don't rest too long on a proven method, because it could change on you. You have to. I'm a big believer in having multiple paths of success for your product. You can't rely on one, but you know, there's so much work that is finding that void that your product or service can have, and then making sure there's not too many of you that do that in one trade area, because you can have a great idea. Someone could just have more marketing or more money to put behind it than you. Mm-hmm. A lot of businesses get hurt in that first 12 months, and I don't think they think through how tough it's going to be.
Well, I think in that instance is that you are optimistic about what's going to happen, but then you're not as pessimistic about what could happen, and therefore you're out of balance. And so you're not too heavy on one side over the other, but it's looking at the entire spectrum and the range and saying, how am I best constituted to handle one side versus the other? That's when you have a much more healthy outlook and perspective of how to run your business. It also sounds as if you all went through that exercise. I mean, you're talking about a six-month due diligence process. There's a lot of companies that have either acquired or merged with other companies in a far less amount of time. And in that instance, you know, what does that then mean? Did you accurately look at where your upside is coming from? But then conversely, did you accurately depict where your downside was going to come from? And then do you have a sober mentality regarding the entire scope of it? Because it's not going to fall heavy to the right or fall heavy to the left. It's going to be somewhere in that middle. But do you know how big the range is to then determine how big your middle might be? And right, just, you know, the example that you gave, I think, is a really good example for you business owners of how do you look at your business when you're thinking about creating a new product, acquisitioning a product, merging with an entity, closing a department, but maybe opening another department, you know, looking at a different type of service. Where's your new market potential? All of these things swirl in the mind of the business owner, whether you know the formal term or the right vocabulary or not. These are your realities, and how you go about the decision-making process makes all the difference. In our short time, in the event, Jude, that anyone wanted to have these mouth guards, where do they go? How do they find them?
Well, you can go to our website at gameon.com, you'll see probably 15 different colors with a strap, without a strap. Football, many of the leagues require the officials need to see the strap. We have a youth, we have an adult, and we even have the ability, if you want to put a logo or your initials or the schools, they can customize it as well. But they're on there, and if there are school systems or what have you, there are discounts for bundles, I believe at 50 and above. So, you know, that just reach out to us. We've got all the contact information, and we can bring that price down on bulk orders. But it's a really different product for anyone that's ever used mouth guards in the past. It feels different.
All right, and if anybody, and I'm not certain if Delta Dental has, let me just ask really quickly, can it be private pay or is that only corporate?
That's one of our fastest growing. We've doubled the number of individuals in Kentucky that buy dental insurance directly.
And how do they do that?
Well, they go to our website, Delta Dental, www.deltadentalky.com, and there's information right there. And if you don't want to fill it out online, you want to call the 800 number, we have licensed customer service reps that can do that process right there.
All right, fantastic. Well, everyone, thanks so much for listening today. That is about the time for our show. Jude Thompson, thanks so much for joining today and giving us your expertise. We really appreciate it, and hopefully we can use it. Remember, everyone, we have a topic every day, so tomorrow is Tech Tuesday. So please tune in for Tech Tuesday. I'm Dr. Baker, and this is Dr. Orders. Enjoy the rest of your Monday.
Thank you for joining us for Doctor's Orders. You can contact Dr. Baker by phone at 1-855-249-4677, by email at info@drbaker.us. You can learn more on our website at www.drbaker.us. Be sure to tune in every Monday through Friday at 2 p.m. right here on 1320 AM, 103.9 FM, and on www.1320thevoice.com.